All That Remains by James Swallow. Read by John Banks. The deck tilted under my feet until I was walking like a crab, one foot on what used to be the floor, the other on what was the starboard sidewall. Gravity had become unusual, and it spread itself in peculiar patterns throughout the ship's corridors. Some strange artifact of the malfunctions, perhaps. I didn't know enough to tell. It's not where my expertise lies. But I imagine that if I could have seen it, the gravity would pile like drifts of snow blown into odd corners. Snow like we had at home, on Nomir, before the melts and the ending. Flicking that thought away, I used the sconces and the walls as handholds, taking care to first beat out any flickering electro candles with the butt of my las rifle. The others kept pace behind me, and I could hear them all labouring their breaths in the cold, heavy air. I didn't need to turn to see the aura light around their heads. I knew it would be unchanged, anger red and terror black. Without the ship's internal illumination, the only way we could navigate was by the sullen glow from the chamber at the far end of the corridor. Long shadows reached towards us, inky and fathomless. I felt as if I was some parasitic thing crawling up the throat of a dead host animal, questing for the open, fanged mouth. The noise of slow twisting metals surrounded us as the ship was continually stressed and relaxed. I was no voidborn, but I'd ridden in starships on many occasions, and I knew what sounded wrong. I knew the sound of something tested to breaking point, something that was going to die. The thought fatigued me, and I stopped to rest. I felt heavy and damp, as if I'd been dragged through ice water, uniform, war cloak, pack, and all. The lip of a jammed hatch served as a temporary halt, and the others accepted it readily. Dalos sat closest to me, and immediately had his cards out, his spindly pink fingers going over them. He worked the careworn rectangles of plas paper with the rote deftness of a gambling shop. The cards glinted, the print across their faces worn away in places where he had dealt and re-dealt them a thousand times. I could make out the faint numerals and the abstract geometric shapes of the suits.
4 of emeralds, he muttered, unaware of himself. 2 of hammers.
Dalos's face was half hidden under a mask of dirty bandages. A monster had burned him, so I'd learned. The nimbus of a bolt of spewed fire had passed close to his unit, enough to torch the rest of the men in his mortar crew, but not enough to kill him. What I could see of Dalos's face was pink, like his hands, where he'd beat out the backwash flames, as raw as his aura and just as bright. Not a one of us was what you could call able. I think even the most generous of observers would have considered us to be a sorry collection of souls. 6 men, clad in uniforms of the great Imperial Army, a scooping of poor bloody infantry from 6 different battalions all across the front line of the insurrection. We were the Canis Fasces, the sons of worlds ground up into chum by the inexorable machine of this new war. I think we all had badges of differing rank and status, but the memory evades. On the ship, it never mattered. No one was in charge. There was no chain of command. We simply were. Any intentions to salute or to snap to orders seemed pointless. A lot of things seemed pointless after all the horrors we'd witnessed. But so we were. I'd lost fingers on my right hand, my off hand, and so somehow I interpreted that as lucky, and taken shrapnel in my torso and thigh. The pieces were still in me, needles pricking me with each step I took. The small pains made me tired as much as they kept me awake. Dalos, as I said, was the burned man. Breng, with his skin the deep ebon of varnished wood, he showed the puckering and scarification of a gas attack victim. It was agony for him to speak, the poor fool's throat now a ruin, so he communicated as much through tilts of the head and hollow glares as he could. I think Lo Mund might have been an officer once, back when it mattered. That would explain the long white hair and the regal cut of his face, perhaps. That bit of him was broken, though. He had been belly cut and spilled on the mud, saved only because blind panic and adrenaline had made him cup his own innards in his hands for long enough to stagger back to a safe zone. Then, Chenek and Yale, each sallow of flesh with perpetually hooded eyes, both from the same world and both having been near killed by claws and stubber fire. We were a small pack of walking wounded. I'd not seen an uninjured man, and we were all men, for there were no females on this vessel, since we'd disembarked from the rescue boat that bore me from Nomea. The closest thing I'd come across to the hale and whole were the lobotomized Medicaid servitors that prowled the ward decks, tending to the injured. If there were actual medics and chirurgeons on board this hulk, then they'd not cared to turn their attention to us. There were so few of us, but what took my pause was that the ship was still full. The holds carried children, refugee boys out of ruined families or from bombed-out Scholaria, war orphans by the dozen. Sometimes we heard them crying for their parents, for answers, for anything. It burned me, in a way, to admit that I was as lost as they were. This was one ship among several, or so I thought. In truth, I hadn't seen a porthole since we jumped into the screaming madness of the warp and fled the perfidy of the Horsun Warmaster. Whether or not the other craft was still out there, I didn't know. A few gunboats protecting bulk carriers packed to the gunwales with injured. Our pathetic little convoy stopped here and there to pick up other contingents of the similarly injured. I'd heard that some of the other vessels carried wounded space marines. Was such a thing possible, I wondered. It seemed fanciful that any of the Imperium's immortal champions could ever suffer something so mundane as a mere wound. And so, in time, none of us had the first clue as to where we were or to which points of the etheric compass we were headed. The only constant was the lamentation of the almost dead echoing through the cavernous wards as they fought nightmares in their sleep. That, and the sound of the engines. But after a time, I began to notice patterns. That's what I'm good at. I can see things. I don't speak of it much because it can frighten an unwary soul and anger others into rash action. People don't like what they cannot understand, and they tend to react with violence over all else. In the ranks of the Imperial Army, that violence can come by blade or lasbolt, so it is conducive to a man's well-being not to go looking for it. The patterns on ships like this, there's always a mix of the wounded, from those sad cases who would be better given the Emperor's peace, to the ones who are little more than malingerers. Not on this vessel, though. I saw that the injured here were all souls who could, if care were given, make it back to the front lines. In all the passage through the ship's labyrinthine interiors, I'd not come upon one that could not have been healed to fight another day. Those more needy or less likely to survive had been transferred off when we docked or made rendezvous with other Medicaid ships in deep space. The ones that replaced them had faces of familiar cast. You could see it in the eyes. Dallas and Lo Mund and the others here, every man we met along the way. I saw that same look staring back at me from the mirror. Not just the 1,000-yard stare of a soldier, not just that. A shared burden that none of us could talk about because we had all spent our lives denying it, hiding it.
Six of crosses,
Dallas stuttered, working the cards into a blur of movement.
Ace, the ace of daggers, the other ships are gone.
We'd been climbing for the better part of a day, up from the midships levels where the radiation shielding was heavy and immovable, locking us in. The lower decks, the engineering spaces, weren't connected to the wards, and there seemed little reason to seek a way to reach them. We numbered few, and those of us who were mechanically savvy were far from engine seers. Brain was the closest thing we had to a technologian, being a ship hand and pilot savant. It seemed more logical to head up, to find the flying bridge and command tiers. At first, I insisted that we look to the youths in the other compartments, perhaps to lend them some courage, but there seemed little point to that. We had none to spare. Recall that I spoke before of the constants of sound, the moaning and the engines. I'd woken the day before from a fitful sleep, full of dream colours, to a reality of cold silence from the warp motors. Without explanation, we were suddenly adrift. Malfunctions came soon after. Power gave out in sudden falls of darkness and creeping waves of hoarfrost. Air fouled and became still. Worse were the doors that fell like great blades guillotining down across the corridors, sealing off sections of the ship without warning. There had been nothing to suggest collision or impact by enemy weapons. After a few hours, when we were still alive and the corridors were not crawling with blood-hungry Xenos, murderous traitors or the other things, we drew plans to investigate. I saw patterns, but I hadn't seen any sign of this one forming. That's why I volunteered, that and the fact that I could hold a gun. The few that we had liberated from an emergency armory, we clutched to us like talismans of protection. If the new enemy was out there, of course, I wondered how much use the guns would be to us. At best, they were a comforting illusion of strength. I remembered the streets of Nomea running red. I remembered the giants slaughtering all who dared to stand or who did not flee fast enough. I remember the horrors, but only as blurs of meat and talons and blood, as if my mind had smudged out the memory of them rather than know it with any clarity. I looked down at the hand with the missing fingers, and the echo of stark pain was there, cold and quick.
Hekane!
Yael was the one who eventually spoke.
We move on?
He gestured towards the dim light ahead, asking the question of me, of all of us. I nodded. We move on. I know what kind of war this is. I fought on a dozen worlds in the Arkali cluster and far beyond, on deserts and in oceans, through cloud reaches and mountain passes. But Nomea was my home. We always seemed to come back to there, a rough rabble of people we had been called, and that was right. Constantly infighting, each of our tribes nurturing grudges against the others, like they were our offspring. What can you say of the Nomihai? That we know how to hate? That we can find an insult in a bouquet of roses? Those things are true. But it is also true that we love our emperor and we are proud of our imperium. Perhaps that is why our petty little differences were tolerated by the bureaucrats of Terra. They let us bloody each other in our small rivalries, because they knew that when the call came, we would pick up arms and march side by side without hesitation. All enmities forgotten for the moment in the Emperor's name. Our contentious nature makes us good warrior stock. I'll point you to a dozen planets brought hard into compliance by regiments born of worlds in the Arkali sector. We did our part for the Great Crusade. That was never in question. Of course, in recent times we started to trickle home and fight amongst ourselves once again, but never enough to make it an issue beyond our own borders. But then the change came, the rebellion, the insurrection, the heresy, as some of the more histrionic called it. Many didn't understand at first, and then they were dead. But I understood. I find patterns. I know betrayal when I see it. It runs like lifeblood through the veins of this war. It is what powers the will of the traitors and the men who foolishly think that they can ride the edges of the bastard Horus's cloak. This war is not being fought for desire of power. It's not just a revolution against the yoke of an oppressor. Materiel and territory? Those are objectives of passing interest. No. What we face here is treachery for treachery's sake. I think I knew that from the first, but it is only now that I have the words to express the thought, now that I have had the time to think on it. Horus, may he die a thousand deaths, is the very definition of traitor, the purest evolution of that idea made manifest. He's a son hating the father, a citizen betraying his state, a patriot burning his flag, a commander killing his soldiers. For all his gene-engineered origins, Horus is a human sacrificing humanity. He is the worst of us. I know this not because I've seen the War Master, or spoken to him, or anything like that. I know it because I've seen with these eyes the horrors that he has called to battle in his name. And fate take me. In my dreams, I've stood upon the edge of the crumbling abyss that he seeks to plunge us into. It was perhaps a day later when we finally made it to the command tiers. Many corridors up there were sealed by those thick drop doors, and the ones with glassy portals allowed me to look through and see vacuum-bloated corpses in the compartments beyond, drifting in null gravity. More life support failures. More unlucky dead, young and old alike.
"Didn't live this long to be killed by bloody machines failing," Chenek grated. "Not burning my luck now."
He fingered a chain habitually worn round his wrist, a line of metal beads dull with age. I think he could hear something in the way they rattled, but if that was so, Chenek never sought to talk about it. I was going to answer him, but then I saw Lo Mund and Breng bringing up their guns. A heartbeat later, footsteps were coming towards us. I listened. You learn quick when the horrors are abroad. You learn how to hear for talons scraping and bones dragging. This was just the clatter of boots on metal plates, but I wasn't about to be casual. I've seen things that will look like men to your eyes, but with auras belonging to monsters that only the insane could imagine. A youth stumbled around the corner and we nearly shot him for his temerity. He saw us and almost fouled his breeches in shock. "Don't shoot!" he cried. The boy was barely a teenager, shaven-headed and dirty. "Who the blades are you?" demanded Lo Mund, pointing with his las pistol. "Talk!" He did, collapsing and babbling all at once. He told us his name was Zartine, a foundling boy from a city orphanage on Zophor's world, bold enough to slip out of the lower wards to explore the ship and now regretting it. He was utterly terrified, and not just of us. I could see his colours flashing orange, out of control. I helped him up. "Calm down, lad. What are you doing up here? Do you know what happened to the ship?"
"I know," Zartine snapped back. "It's worse than you think. They're here, don't you see? Can't you hear them?"
He waved at the air, hands clutching at nothing.
"Space Marines!"
Breng made a noise like he was hawking up phlegm.
"No legionaries here." "Wrong,"
shouted the youth. He pointed over his shoulder.
"Down there! Saw him!"
"He isn't lying."
It was a second before I realised that it was Dalos who had spoken. I turned and found him with the damn deck in his hands again, his rifle stowed.
"Eight of hammers."
He held up the worn card to show us all, as if it were a warrant of absolute truth. All of a sudden, I was incensed at his moronic little game, and I crossed the distance to Dulles in a rush, slapping the cards out of his grip with a savage backhand.
"You don't know,"
I snarled, fighting back a surge of panic.
"You can't know that."
Dread coiled inside me, icy and thick. Dalos wailed and immediately dived at the deck, snatching up the cards where they had scattered. He seemed so hurt by my action. My anger was strangled and guilt washed over me. Guilt and fear. Let me tell you how it happened on Nomea. Let me show you the little war of my life, the microcosm of the greater treachery that even now writhes across the stars, writing itself into our history. You would think that because of who we were, the conflict would have come in blood and thunder from the outset, man against man, neighbours fighting neighbours. Well, all that did come, but not at first. The start of it was insidious, and for that, I hate Horus all the more. He didn't come to our worlds with warships and guns. He didn't even consider us worthy of those things. Nomea and the worlds of Arcali were set upon the path to dissolution and ruin by a handful of perfidious agents, less than a platoon's worth, fifth columnists, interlopers, and sneaks who turned us against ourselves. We gave them fertile ground, idiots that we were. A web of old jealousies, lines of distrust that were ripe for exploitation. Where the Emperor's light of illumination had united us, the War Master's shadow divided. And the cleverness of it was the perfect fractal nature of the deceit. It scaled up and down, using the same tools to embellish ingrained hatreds between whole worlds, nations, cities. all the way down until it was street against street, house against house, brother against brother. We all hated so very well on Nomia, and directed by callous hands, that hatred ripped us apart. But not all at once. It was subtle, careful. I remember with blinding clarity the day when the poison of it bubbled to the surface in my platoon. Note that we were nothing special, just a division of riflemen with no great laurels and banners to carry before us. No impressive name or clever sobriquet. There was a force number attached to our division, and nothing else. In the scheme of the Emperor's Great Crusade, we were quite ordinary. But that was not enough to protect us. For months, almost a solar year, things had been changing at far distant command. Directives would come to Nomia, and we would be told that new rules were in place. Each was presented to us like a gift, not as a demand, but if one resisted, then the velvet fell away to reveal iron beneath. Refusal was not encouraged. Soldiers and officers alike were simply told that things had changed, that this was the way of it now. As much as we grumbled and sneered, as much as those angry thoughts became angry words, nothing was undone. Piece by piece, the line of loyalty began to move. We tipped towards the edge by degrees, though the motion of the gradient seemed insignificant each time. The observance of a festival day was cancelled. Weapons of a certain type were recalled. Uniform colours adjusted. Liberty rearranged. Regulations altered in subtle ways with the core purpose left unclear. One tiny thing after another, each of small weight of consequence, so much so a man might feel almost churlish to question each openly, but measured again in their collective. Imagine the navigation of a sailfoil flyer in the cloud reaches. She moves under the breath of wind towards true north, straight and true. But the hand upon the tiller turns a degree off the line. The sails are angled oh so gently, first by one turn and then another. If no man watches the path of the suns over the bowsprit, in time the flyer finds herself turned to due south and into the teeth of an oncoming storm, and all escaping the notice of the crew, asleep below decks. I recall the day when the words were finally said out loud. Today, we affirm our loyalty to His Highness the War Master Horus in defiance of an aloof and uncaring terror. They never used the words Emperor or Imperium because to do so would confuse the people they sought to assimilate into their acts of treason. I watched the new flags unfurl, the noble Aquila replaced in favour of an unblinking, slitted eye. We knew it was coming, of course. In the barracks after lights out, it was all that men spoke of. In those hushed conversations, there was much talk of defiance. I wonder where it went in the cold light of day. Here, then, was the moment of both my greatest courage and my greatest stupidity. When the words were said, I spoke out, and when I looked across the hall to find the faces of my comrades, the ones that I knew agreed with me, there was only silence and eyes turned away, dark auras burning in my gaze. I knew then the true nature of this war and the lifeblood of it. There was a lot of talk about what we would do. We'd come a long way, too far just to timidly retreat back to the war decks and wait for an uncertain fate. Don't mistake what we did for courage, though. I think all of us were long past those kinds of ideals. I learned that we shared things, all the adults on this barge, not just our shared secrets, but a shared experience. Not one of us had been spared a brush with the horrors. Some had fought them, most had run from them. All knew that whatever they were, wherever they came from, the monstrosities that Horus had unleashed upon the galaxy were unlike anything we had ever fought before. In a way, we were all caught by our own natures. The pure animal part of us wanted to flee from them, while the rational, hateful human part would have given anything for a weapon big enough to kill those fearsome things. And so we went on, Zartine joining us, trailing at the back with Yeo. The boy might have had some kind of gift too, I think. He kept talking about music when no one else could hear it. At last, we reached the great crenellated entrance vestibule to the ship's command centre, and Breng gingerly worked the controls to retract the hatch. For a moment, nothing happened. And then, in the blink of an eye, the great iron door dropped open, slamming into the deck. A hard-edged shadow, so large that it filled the open hatchway, loomed inside. I think that if I'd been quicker of mind, I would have run. Instead, I raised the las rifle as the shape shifted its bulk to pass through a gap built for men of my stature. Into the light it came, and Zartine was proven right. A single warrior of the Legiones Astartes came out to meet us. Heavy boots of ceramite clanged against the deck plates, making the floor jump beneath our feet. In aspect, the Space Marine was a giant. I saw a broad chest plate emblazoned with the Imperial Aquila, arms thick as the trunks of great trees, a scowling beaked helmet that resembled the skinned skull of some giant raptor. The eyes in that face glowed red with combat autosensors, ore specs returns, and scrolling data feeds. The warrior's armor was strangely bereft of any Legion iconography, plain, in a hue alike to cut slate. He moved with a fluidity more akin to an apex predator than anything born of humanity. At his back, a hood-like construct framed his helm, built more to resemble the archway of some long-lost devotional chapel than any battle mechanism. It was dark, heavy iron studded with crystals that burned with blue light. It drew my sight like gravity pulling upon me, and I glimpsed an aura there made of colours that did not exist in the common world. For my sins, I had seen those shades before. The warrior was armed with a massive bolt gun, but it remained maglocked to a holster pad on his thigh. In his other hand, he held a staff of polished, flawless silver. I remember thinking that it seemed an odd affectation. With his free hand, he reached up and removed his helm, pressure seals hissing into the cold air. A war god looked back at us, scalp shorn of hair, tattoos of intricate nature adorning his cheeks and throat, scars like red trophies upon his flesh. His eyes, his true eyes, startled me with their jet depths. I saw something in them, something I'd often seen in the mirror. Our weapons were aimed at his chest. He did not order us to lower them, but passed a solemn, measuring gaze over each man before him. The muzzles of the lasguns dropped away without a spoken word. When his gaze reached me, I knew that he was taking my measure with senses that I could only guess at. Secretly, I'd always thought myself special, better than the rest, because of my dash of the sight. I believed that things were open to me in subtle ways, things that ordinary men could not perceive. But now I understood that what I lauded in myself was a fraction of what this giant could call upon.
"Rafe, Hecane," he intoned, his voice low and booming. "You have come a long way."
He knew my name. He knew us all, every single man on this ship. I've no doubt of it. I opened my mouth to speak, but then he raised his head, and there I saw the twin sigils branded into his flesh. On one side, a design like a scarab beetle. On the other, a circular star surrounded by a nimbus of rays. The grey armour did not hide his true nature from me. The legionary that stood before me was a warrior of the Thousand Suns, the sons of the Mage King Magnus. He was the scion of a traitor legion. The last time I'd seen his kind, their war gear red as madness, it had been at the head of an army of horrors laying waste to my homeworld. The soldiers I'd called my comrades did not turn to Horus's banner from cowardice, know that. The reasons are far more complex. They all turned upon pretexts that to them seemed reasonable. I do believe this. There was no mass mind control, no drugging and warping of self. That happened later, with the arrival of the horrors. I had time to think on that while I waited in the brig, imprisoned there amongst the others who had been too slow to agree or too forthright to cover their doubts. Looking back, I was furious with myself.
How had I ever been so naive to think that I could foster rebellion in that moment? I am no eloquent speaker who could rally men with a stirring speech. I was just a fool who disagreed openly and paid for it.
They were going to execute us. That was part of the new orders. But they found it hard to carry out the command. I think that was the last part of whatever resistance they had, slowly withering and dying beneath the War Master's eclipse. At first, I was frustrated and impotent with my anger. I cursed them all 100 times for their weakness and trite duplicity, but eventually that rage was spent, and I could do nothing but ruminate. Don't assume that I came to forgive my former squadmates, far from it, but I did come to understand them. The young lieutenant, who was the son of a great general, he who was always a friend to the line officers like me, who never wore his braids with arrogance, but managed to be one of the common men, even though he was not like the rest of us, he said he would oppose, and yet he did not. Of all of us, he had the best chance to rally the men, but he kept his silence. He had so very much to lose, after all. He would have fallen so far. The braggart sharpshooter, who always had the answer to any question, cocksure and handsome, never fazed by any challenge or upset. He carried himself with such utter confidence that I couldn't believe he wouldn't slice through any draconian edict like a sword point. He stood meekly, becoming a different, smaller man when the order came. And then, the bluff sergeant, who always raged louder than I ever could, her jacket scarred by the number of times her rank had been broken and then earned anew. Her voice was strongest by any lights, but silent too in that moment. She was a creche mother with 2 battle orphans as her charges, and I think she saw their faces that day, feared how life would go for them if she were gone. It wasn't hard for my comrades to find an excuse to hate me. By accident of birth, I'd already given it to them. A handful amongst the platoon, the sergeant and sharpshooter included, knew I had a touch of the sight on me. In combat, you come to learn such things from the soldiers who fight alongside you, whether you want to or not. Before, I had seemed like a lucky charm to them, some of the men even coming to me, secretive and hushed, to ask for a look-see over their aura. I couldn't work the gift like my mother had, but I tried, and it had been enough. In return, they had kept my secret from the black ships. But now it was the reason to disown me. Someone whispered the word witch, and I knew that I would be executed first. All my life, I had lived with the fear that the silent sisterhood would come to spirit me away, but now I saw that death would be the more likely outcome. That night, I escaped the stockade with 6 others, and we found the resistance a day or two later.
"You want to kill me," he said.
There was no judgment in the words. Yes, I could not, would not lie. Your kind brought horrors to my world. You destroyed everything I... I ran out of energy and clutched the las rifle to my chest. A boiling, churning hatred rose through me, and it made me feel strangely free. The warrior smiled thinly.
"Not I, Rafe Hekain. Those who did those things are oathbreakers, and my brothers no more."
He glanced at Breng.
"You. You know ship tech, yes? Your skills are needed."
He walked back into the command center, and we followed him. The dead were everywhere here, suffocated by the decompression. I saw where a viewport had been blown out, now made safe by a blast shutter. Too slow to save the bridge crew, it seemed. Out of the windows, there were alien stars and infinite blackness. Dalos's cards had played true after all. Our ship was alone. The legionary directed Breng to work at the drive control.
"Your vessel suffered damage in warp transit. The rest of the convoy left you here, becalmed. I was summoned to see you complete the rest of your voyage."
Again, there was the smile.
"This ship carries precious cargo. I would warrant that none aboard know just how important you are."
"We're just soldiers," offered Yale. "Soldiers and whelps, fodder for the guns and cubs to be culled."
A shadow passed over the face of the Thousand Sun.
"Never say that. No one who fights in the Emperor's name is without worth.
I glared at him. The sons of Magnus march with Horus. I saw it. I saw the fiends and the freaks that your brethren conjured, the
demons. His utterance of the words seemed to instantly drain all heat from the chamber.
Yes, you saw those things. All of you have seen them.
He shook his head, regretfully.
Do you not yet understand, soldier? You see patterns. Can you not see this one?
He pointed with the silver staff, taking in all of the men.
Each of you has the beginning of a greatness. You may call it a sight or a gift, even a curse.
He walked forward and deftly plucked Dalos's cards from the man's trembling hands.
You know the touch of the warp. This is what makes you valuable.
He glanced at Zartine.
That, and one other attribute.
We have all seen them, said Yeo. The horrors!
Every wounded man on this ship has, said the warrior. Why else do you fear sleep? But that fear can be taken from you in time.
Breng stood up, nodding to the drive console to show he had done all that he could. Ready?
The navigators still live, safe in their isolation.
The legionary pointed out towards the ship's bow.
We will set a course. The Regent of Terra, Lord Malkador himself, has need of those aboard this ship. He prepares, and you will all be part of his design. You and the children waiting below.
How? I asked, even as the pressure of an answer built itself in my mind's eye. What good are broken soldiers and war orphans to the Sigilite?
Your wounds will be healed. Those fit enough, young enough to bear the glory, may aspire to see their bodies remade, as I once did.
He touched his chest.
You, we can be reborn in new purpose.
But why us?
Asked Dalos, his hands knitting.
You know why,
said the legionary, his gaze returning to me.
I don't know if the words that came next were from some place in my own thoughts, or if the Thousand Sun made me speak them for him, but they were true and undeniable. Horus has brought a new kind of war to the galaxy. Bolters and lasguns won't be enough to end it. A different kind of weapon is needed.
Aye.
The great figure nodded gravely.
And those who do not perish in the tempering will be those weapons. You and hundreds of others, lost child, common man and legionary alike, gathered in silence and secreted aboard ships like this one. Each soul in this room, aboard this vessel, has been declared dead. The lives you lived before this are as dust. Malkador has commanded this. So shall it be.
Zartine was pale.
Where are we going?
The legionary strode up to the navigation controls and laid his great hands upon them.
A moon orbiting a ringed world in the light of Great Sol itself. A place called Titan.
That was All That Remains by James Swallow, read by John Banks.